Welcome to Leap to Faith, a broadcast service of the Lutheran Churches of the Monterey Bay Area and Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Each week, we bring Sunday's gospel lesson to the Friday evening airways in the hopes that you will find the good in the good news. Tonight, we're broadcasting from the campus of the California State University at Monterey Bay. We're at the campus ministry of Melissa Harper, and there's something about bad girls of the Bible. What is the name that I heard earlier?
It's a girls' youth group that we talk about the bad girls of the Bible.
That sounds like fun to me. This evening, we're working with the gospel we're working with is John chapter 10, verses 1 to 10, and it's the Christ the Good Shepherd Sunday gospel lesson. So we're going to be talking about shepherding sheep and, I guess, shepherding people. And with us tonight, we have Pastors John Perez and Roy Bloomhurst. John, I'll start with you. Is it too early to call you a pastor?
Just a few hours short, and you'll be able to do that from the time this airs.
So you've been working at this for how long?
Since November of 1994, when I entered the Diocesan School of Theology in Diocese of Olympia, Washington.
10 years. Well, I guess congratulations. Should we give him a round of applause? Way to go. We're all very proud of you. Pastor Roy Bloomhurst, mm-hmm. Welcome.
Thank you.
And you're a pastor emeritus. What's an emeritus?
It means you're old. It means when you work in your congregation, you won't be paid. And it means you have dignity.
Well, congratulations to you. That sounds like a lot to be proud of. You were in with
St. Philip's in Carmel Valley. I went there in 1990 and retired about 3 years ago. I had about 12 years there, I think.
How was the golfing?
Well, I don't golf.
Well, that's a bad news if you're in a golfing paradise like that and you don't golf. Well, let's start off with a gospel lesson. We're looking at John chapter 10. And before we read the gospel lesson, I think it would be really good for us to have a little lesson in agriculture, and because this is all about sheep and shepherds. And how many of us have actually worked with sheep? Everybody raise your hand. Nobody raises your hand. Oh, Roy has actually worked with sheep?
A little bit.
And one of our graduates here, what's your name?
D.
D? Tell us about your sheep.
Well, I actually, for boarding when I was traveling around Spain and Europe, as an undergraduate, I worked on a farm for about a little over a week for board.
And Roy, what about your experience with sheep?
Grew up on a farm, and it was a diversified farm, which meant we had sheep, pigs, cows, the works. And one of the interesting things is when there was a black sheep born, that was given to me. I got to own all the black sheep.
And then you grew up to be a pastor. Go figure, huh? Well, Jesus used stories to talk about his message, to bring his message to his disciples, and one of the messages that he brought was about the shepherd and the flock. John, could you help us a little bit before we actually read this and tell us what it was like to raise sheep back then? How did they go about doing that?
Well, one thing to keep in mind is that we've had about 2,000 years of breeding of sheep since then. And sheep were a bit brighter than what we consider sheep today. I always get a bit nervous when we talk about this of being sheep, that we think of them as being a dumb animal. And they have a lot more intelligence that we actually give them credit for. And so to be considered a sheep, I think, in some ways, is a good thing. If you have ever dealt with being challenged by one, they can be pretty smart animals. And when we look at how the sheep back then were dealt with from Jesus' birth in Bethlehem, they were raised for a very special purpose, a sacrifice. And so they were treated well in Bethlehem, and they had a very high status because they were going to be used for a very special purpose and ate only special grasses. So in that context, sheep could be everything from very high regard to a common animal, and that it was an important duty at the time to take care of the sheep, make sure they didn't get lost, the accountability. And back then, before we started learning how to use sheep herding dogs and things like that, sheep were very accustomed to the voice of the shepherd and the awareness of the shepherd. And so the shepherd would be able to call out, maybe get some sort of response, or they'd be able to come to his voice. So because he worked in the field, lived in the field, there was actually this sort of bond of the animal knowing its master.
And when the master would say come or talk or sing, the sheep would follow.
Correct. They have, you know, whether they knew the words like our own pets or the pets know the sound of our voice, the same thing with sheep at the time.
And what did these shepherds do with their flocks at night?
These shepherds would try to keep them in a close surrounding to them. Usually if there's a bonfire out in the fields or something like that where the shepherds themselves would be staying to keep warm, the sheep would be close by. And so they knew that that comfort or that guard was very near to them.
Good. Roy, do you have anything to add from your experiences to that ancient way of tending sheep?
I was very interested in that. I didn't know all that. Sheep in Missouri were basically in a field that was fenced, and the big job there was to make sure you didn't have too many coyotes and That was the big deal. We didn't do. I don't think my sheep knew my voice. My pet sheep did.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like a pet.
Well, that's one of the things I think we really have to understand before we read this gospel lesson, was that times were much different, mm-hmm. and land holdings were much different. In Roy's time and in our time, people have individual farms. They're fenced off. All of the land is very well controlled. The sheep are penned in. But in those times, the sheep were not penned in. They were tended by an individual who watched over them and took them out and brought them in.
Right. And, you know, the lands back then were basically public lands owned by the community. So there was this no sense of this is my field or your field, but it basically a communal type of relationship to the land. And so you may have had several different flocks actually gathered together at night with all the shepherds gathered together, and then back in the day, daybreak, they would all separate out again.
When I was looking over some material for this program tonight, I read one account of a sheepfold where the different shepherds would bring their flocks into the sheepfold at night, and it would have an open gate, but all of the sheep would be inside of it so that they could be protected from the wolves. And I guess they even had lions and whatnot back then.
Lions and bears, I guess, are some of the things of back then, but definitely I think what happens with the pen situation is at that time when you're starting to separate the lambs and the flock out is when you're going to start bringing them in out from the fields into the pasture type of fencing area. So that would be a time when you maybe start sending some of the sheep out that are going to be sacrificed, and thinning out the herd a bit. That's when you want to bring them in together.
Okay, so I guess that's the setting. We're looking at the biblical times, and we're looking at shepherds and sheep, and we're going to be reading a little bit from John chapter 10, verses 1 to 10, and see if you remember the story. I tell you the truth, the man who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber. The man who enters by the gate is the shepherd of his sheep. The watchman opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. Jesus used this figure of speech, but they did not understand what he was telling them. Therefore, Jesus said again, I tell you the truth. I am the gate for the sheep. All who ever came before me were robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. He will come in, go out, and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. That is the story of the shepherd and his flock from John chapter 10, verses 1 to 10. This is Leap to Faith. I am Michael Olson. We are broadcasting live from the California State University, Monterey Bay, from Melissa Harper's campus ministry, who sometimes call themselves Bad Girls of the Bible. And we are joined tonight by almost pastor, close enough for government work here, right? Pastor John Perez from
Epiphany Lutheran.
Just a sec, let me get the mic over here.
Epiphany Lutheran and Episcopal Church.
Good. Epiphany Lutheran. So the Lutherans and the Episcopalians get along good enough to have a church together?
They get along great. That's one of the things we're kind of excited about. We're about to have both Lutheran and Episcopal confirmations. And that shows you that they're able to work together side by side, still hold on to their traditions and beliefs, and celebrate each other's traditions and beliefs.
Wonderful. And Pastor Roy Bloomhurst, do you still attend St. Philip's, or did it let you go to the same church that you were the pastor of?
Yes and no. We attend quite frequently. We also try not to be there all the time. So we disappeared without disappearing.
Good. Probably a good way of doing it. Well, how do we approach the shepherd and his flock? Where do we begin? For me, there is a number of interesting things. One of them seems to be saying that I'm the way, I am the gate. And Jesus doesn't seem to be talking about himself as being the shepherd. He seems to be talking about himself as being the gate. John, you want to start us off here?
Sure. I think that in this story, first off, we're not sure the context of who he's talking to. He may still be talking to the Pharisees, but it seems a bit ambiguous in John at this point. And that is a really nice, rich thing for today, because it can actually be talking to us. This lesson really transcends that event on it. And there does a bit of ambiguity as to whether Jesus is a shepherd or the gatekeeper or the gate. And so, again, this lesson has a lot of opportunity to move through it and to pick out different pieces and from different perspectives on it. I think Jesus is making that point of being the way, and going back to what we were talking about earlier with the sheep going through the gate and those who are getting ready to be separated from the flock, or those who are about to be going off to market, that some of the choice lambs are coming through and they're being decided at that point as they're coming through the gate, if we're thinking about that historical event. Mm-hmm. So on one hand, Jesus is that shepherd who, you know, is trying to make that connection of people listening to him and not be fooled. And at the same time saying, if you follow my voice, come through this, then I'll lead you through this path. This is the true path where I become the gate. So we can go back and forth there.
Good. Pastor Roy?
Well, you might want to note for the whole chapter that there are really three things brought up. One is the gate, one is the shepherd, the other is the flock. And if you look at the chapter, the gate is explained in 7:10. That's why it ends basically with the gate. The shepherd gets explained in 11-18. We're not dealing with that. And then the flock is explained in 26-30. So we kind of wind up with the gate in this one, because that's where they stop the reading.
Then we've been cheated. Well, if we're talking about the gate, then let's talk about the gate. One of the things that kind of struck me was, as is his assertion that the only way to salvation is through me. Mm-hmm. Now, that seems kind of harsh in this world of inclusion and tolerance and acceptance, that Jesus would say, I am the gate. The only way to salvation is through me. How do we approach that? Roy?
Yeah, I think, first of all, you talk about context. This is at a time when world religions are not really taught in the schools. This is not a time that asks this question the way we do. Remember that Jesus, and especially this section of John and John itself, was at a time when people who were saying that they thought Jesus was the Messiah were basically being expelled from the synagogue, and there was a big rift developing. The issue was not, do people in three continents away have to be Lutherans or Episcopalians or something like that? The issue is, what are you folks who are standing in front of me doing with me? And so I think he's much more saying, you got to be open to the fact that I'm the way. You can't reject me out of hand, which is what many of them were doing. And that was the big split that was going on in the Gospel of John. The people who, they were all Jewish people, and some of them were saying Jesus is the Messiah, and others were saying he was not. And that's a terrible rift. That's really a hard thing. And so he's emphasizing who he is rather than giving the math for how salvation is going to work around the world.
Well, one thing we know about Jesus was that he was great at causing rifts, wasn't he?
Yeah.
John, what do you think is this notion that Jesus is the gate, and to get salvation, you have to go through him?
Well, in that historical context, you know, John is written for the new Christians of the time, and I think that it is a way of explaining to them where they've gone on this sort of journey. You know, the first part of John deals with his miracles, and the second part of John deals in glorifying him. And then we kind of set the stage of the things that he's done and how he's manifested himself. And this lesson sort of comes towards the end of that, saying you've seen all this before you in the Gospel of John, and this is where we're now going through that sort of gate. You know, the question is how, for me, is in this time, day and time, how we handle this. As Roy was pointing out, that back then, in some ways, it's almost easier to deal with this lesson. Whether today we kind of think of it in a very universal way, when we start to thinking about how do we respond to people three continents away. And I think, Roy, you're absolutely right in that. So for me, the challenge of this lesson is how do we put it in today's context on them.
Well, let's put it in the context in which it was given us, just for the heck of it. Let's go back to Jesus being the gatekeeper for a flock of sheep. I always look for where I fit into these things. Mm-hmm. What am I in this? I guess I'm a sheep, right? And if I am a sheep and I am being watched over by the gatekeeper here, what he's saying to us is that the man who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate but climbs in some other way is a thief and a robber. Mm-hmm. And the man who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The watchman opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. I got to thinking, well, I guess I'm inside the pen, and there's somebody who is being the gate here. And I find that to be an immensely comforting way of expressing it, that nobody is going to get in. It seems to be a very protective kind of vision, is it not? To see, here's somebody who is is guarding the gate. Nobody is going to get in except by him. And if we are the sheep, does that net? Isn't he kind of telling us that he is really protecting us?
I think it is protecting us, but I also think, and again, this whole context of sheep, that, and I think of the sort of sacrificial image of the sheep, is that he's protecting us in our faith, that if we're in the gate, we are believers. And it's, to me, it's just not so much that of how to get in, but that we are in that pen, we are protected, and we can be bold to who we are as those sheep. And that, you know, that we really have a place, that sheep are good things in the story, and that they're believers, and they are part of a community of faith, and that they have this relationship, that knowing that because they are believers in this faith, that they are protected on that.
Roy?
Well, I like that Jesus says later down that I am the gate. Whoever enters by me will be saved and will come in and go out and find pasture. So it's not just we're in the fold. It's that I have a shepherd. And to me, that's Psalm 23. The psalmist there is rejoicing that he has a shepherd. He is able to eat in the presence of his enemies. He can walk through the valley of the shadow of death. His cup runs over. All of this is because he has a shepherd. And I see Jesus pretty much doing that same thing here. You have a shepherd, not just to keep you inside, but to get you to pasture. And I think that leads right to, I have come that they might have life and that they might have it abundantly, which is a major theme in John. And for John, that life begins immediately. That's not heaven. Heaven's only the end of the line for that. But Jesus is always offering life right now. This is what it means to be one of his, is now you have pasture, you have life, you have this abundant living that he's talking about.
And you have somebody to watch over you.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I always get into the problems of these things. I think it can be badly abused, too. The idea that I'm a sheep and I'm totally dependent on my shepherd and my shepherd does everything for me. I just can't help going much further than that without realizing that the word pastor means shepherd. And pastor, flock, pastors have often talked about, you know, how do you be a pastor that lets the sheep be plenty independent? One sign of a cult is when the people in the flock all take completely the orders of the shepherd. You know, that's cultic behavior when the leader is in charge completely. So I think this thing it can go a bunch of ways.
Well, we'll take it a bunch of ways. Folks, this is Leap to Faith. I am Michael Olson. Tonight we're sitting in at CSUMB, California State Monterey Bay, with the campus ministry of Melissa Harper. Melissa, are you having fun with your campus ministry?
We're having a great time here together.
Good, because I'm going to start asking you questions and your students as well. So when we come back, we're going to take a quick break. When we do come back, unfortunately tonight you can't participate in this program by calling in, but you can always join us at leaptofaith.org and make your comments there. I'd love to hear from you. We're going to take a quick break right now, but when we're going to come back, we're going to have a little fun talking with students about how they see this particular gospel lesson. So do stay tuned. Welcome back, folks. This is Leap to Faith. Michael Olson here. We are coming to you live this evening. Well, I guess we'll be by the time you hear us, but we're at California State University, Monterey Bay. We're at the campus ministry of Melissa Harper and students. We're having a lot of fun. We're talking about Christ the Good Shepherd, John chapter 10, verses 1 to 10. And it's the story of Jesus and as the gatekeeper. Tonight we have Pastors John Perez and Roy Bloomhurst, and during the break, of course, when things really start to cook, when people start to really talk, is during the breaks and after the show. When the microphone gets turned off, then everybody loosens up and has a good time. But Pastor Roy, I guess a parishioner asked you a great question. They came up to you as you were preaching this gospel lesson on One Christ the Good Shepherd Sunday and said, Pastor, what do we believe about this lesson?
Well, I'll make it a little more general than that. As I said, one of the things that there was a book sometime back called The Wrong Way Home, and it was describing cultic behavior. At the time when many cults were kind of prominent, they asked this psychologist to do a study, did research, but he made it broader. He didn't just study some bizarre cults. He studied, I think, General Motors and the military, a section. And so he really, and he came up with four characteristics of cultic behavior, the first of which is complete dependence on a leader. And then in the midst of reading that, for thinking, what do we think, what do we believe, a parishioner came to me and said about a particular issue, Pastor, what do we believe about that? And he just began to say, all he wanted to do was answer it for him, you know, say, this is what we believe. I really needed to help him to see what does he believe and how can I help him to decide that. That's where the sheep-shepherd thing can really get in bad shape.
Well, in that regards, do not Christians follow a leader? That would be Jesus.
I think Jesus did a good job beyond this about how to be a shepherd. Now, remember, in the Old Testament, the Hebrew Scriptures, when it says shepherds of Israel, that's not guys out on a hillside. That's the kings. That's the high priest. That's the leaders of Israel. And it's fascinating to me to realize that Jesus really bought into a leader as shepherd, leader as one. Now, what do you do? Well, there are all kinds of things related to that. He washed the disciples' feet. That's a servant leader. He would reach out to people that everybody else ignored. And that's an inclusive leader. And so he, later on when he does say, I'm the good shepherd, one way to translate that is, I am the model shepherd. And he did model. He modeled how to lead. I think it would be very fine if kings, those in authority, would look and say, what does it mean to be a shepherd leader? Pastors, that we not, well, that we'd be shepherds.
John, a few days ago, I heard on radio, well, you hear a lot of things on radio, but I heard on radio somebody referring to Christians as being a cult. Are Christians a cult?
I think we are not, but I think there are times and places and a few situations that there are some groups that can fall into that, again, by certain leaders being ones with all the answers and all the ways. And I often think that's kind of the danger in Christianity today is something which I call microwave theology, where people want an immediate answer, an immediate response, and no black or white. They just want the information.
Pastor, what are we supposed to think about this?
Exactly. And that there's this line, and there's takes away from that opportunity of people exploring their faith and getting in touch with their own spirituality. So I think one of the great things of the Lutheran and the Episcopal Church is we we don't follow along that sort of microwave theology, that pastoring is encouraging people to explore, to find their own answers. And many times our role is to walk beside them and walk with them and not necessarily have the answer, but be there with them as we both explore the answer. You know, the shepherd is with the flock. And the flock knows how to eat the grass and knows where to go and do all the things that sheep know how to do. They don't need the pastor telling them, but the pastor's there as a companion, a protection, someone to walk with them on that journey. And I think that's the way we need to Christianity needs to be, is that we're not so black and white. We don't, we're here to give people the answer, but to walk with them in that faith journey.
Well, great. It's time for us to put Melissa Harper on the spot here. Melissa, you're the shepherd, if you will, of which, of course, is what the term is. You're the shepherd of the campus ministry here at CSUMB. You've got a bunch of beautiful students to shepherd. How do you see your role as a shepherd here at CSUMB?
I think it's very much, as John said, it's a journey with the students. I don't have all the answers. I've never had all the answers. I will never have all the answers. I learn as much from them as they do from me. So we explore together. We're in Bible study. We read together. We talk about it together. We discuss movies. I come up with questions. I just throw them out there. Devil's advocate. What do you think about this? Where will this lead? And they're the ones that are coming back and then challenging me with their responses and their own questions.
Well, we have some students sitting right here, so let's go to work with them. Would you introduce yourself, please, and tell us, I guess we're the sheep, right? Mm-hmm. Tell us how you see your role as a sheep.
My name is Abby Michelson, and I'm a freshman at CSUMB. I guess I'm the sheep. I look at Melissa for guidance when we go to Bad Girls of the Bible Bible study. She tells us what she thinks, and she asks for our response, and sometimes it's different, and most of the time it's the same, but we look to her for guidance, and I think we look for God, to God for guidance.
So, Bad Girls of the Bible?
It's a girls' youth group that we go, we study the bad girls of the Bible to see how our lives can be different and how we can be good girls of the Bible.
Good. Our next student is?
I'm Elise Teller, and I'm a sophomore here at CSUMB.
Where are you from?
Mammoth Lakes, California.
Step up to the microphone. Okay. I guess
students, and I put myself in that same boat. I think of myself as being a sheep, but how do you see your role as a young Christian and looking to a pastor or a shepherd? What do you want?
Just pretty much a lot of what Melissa already provides, just guidance, someone there to kind of push me and make me want to read my Bible, and I don't know, just kind of help me learn and grow in God, and I need that extra little push there. So it's good, and she's good to come and talk to about just stuff that we're dealing with as the youth, as students. She's been there. She's experienced a lot of what we're going through, and it's nice having someone to talk to that is willing to get on your level and be like, okay, this is what you're dealing with. This is how God wants you to deal with it, and it's just kind of a good thing.
Good. And here we have a CSUMB graduate. Tell us your name, and what did you graduate in?
My name is Dee Anaya, and I graduated in Teledramatic Arts and Technology.
Wow.
That's interesting. So as a graduate, do you feel that you no longer have the need for a pastor or a shepherd or somebody to watch over you?
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, I still I tried always to maintain a strong connection with my faith after graduation, which is over a year ago. And I feel we have many, many different types of pastors and shepherds in our lives, from our parents to our former professors to even I look at friends, you know, just on our peers as shepherds to different parts of our lives.
Well, one of the things that we always seek to do with Leap to Faith is to take these gospel lessons that most mainline Christian churches are going to feature in their Sunday services, and lay them on the table and ask the question, so what? Does this have any meaning for us today? I mean, look at us, and 2,000 years ago, this is the way they raised sheep, and as Pastor John said, they were dumb sheep back then, and they're smart sheep now. So now that we're smart sheep, do we really need a shepherd? And what lessons, what meaning and what value does this particular gospel lesson from the book of John have for us? And so I guess let's launch into that. Start with you, John. John Perez?
I think the value here is still this warning of listening and knowing the Master's voice, and learning to listen or have an ear for when there's a bad voice, you know, to go in the opposite direction. And that, as it's indicated, there's sort of false prophets out there that may lead people astray, and sort of goes back to this cult thing of giving people ideas or thoughts that really are not what Christ was about. And to me, the lesson is also very grounding, is that if you want to hear the Master's voice and understand it to get through the gate, is to really get back to some basic faith and understanding of Christ.
How do you know when the man who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate but climbs in some other way? I just think of a time back when my kid's sister, who was maybe a high school sophomore or junior, and all the family went up to Golden Gate Park, and we were running around, and all of a sudden, she was gone. And I was looking around, and there she was talking with somebody very earnestly. And this person was inviting her out to lunch, and it was being invited to join the Moonies. And, you know, so how do we know the Master's voice? What does it sound like?
You know, for me, And when I'm introducing this to people on a very basic level, I boil it down to some very simple things. Is this person filtering the message through the gospel? Are they entering the message through another path? And I'm in the risk of getting on a soapbox on a radio program. I think that's really important, that when people start pursuing and investigating the Bible, that they have at its filter the gospel, that is the lens of which we read through. And that's how I approach people to that. So is that person professing a message that the filter is not through the gospel? Are they coming into that message through another means? And so that's how I approach it.
Pastor Roy Blumenhurst, how do you know the Master's voice?
Well, just some comments related to that. It's really different. You talk about 2,000 years ago and now with sheep.
Yes. Smart sheep to dumb sheep, or dumb sheep to smart sheep.
I sit across the table from these college people and realize how different it is for you from my day. My world, when I grew up, was 7 miles wide. That was where I lived. And almost everybody was Lutheran. And you knew everybody. You could do this nice little sheep and shepherd, really work nice. I was trying to think of a similar thing today would be if you had about 50 flocks, all intermingled, shepherds calling out all kinds of ways. That's what you guys live in. It's a diverse world. It is a diverse culture. My kids growing up, they're playmates. Their contacts were not just Lutherans and Episcopalians or something like that. They're everything. So listening to that voice is, I'd like to hear these people say, how do you do that? You know, how do you listen to that din? One thing I'd like to ask that first.
Nope, can't point fingers. Give us your name again. And how do you listen?
Abby Michelson. I listen through reading the Bible and studying and discussing it with my friends.
Don't you run away.
All right. Elise Teller. I don't know. Just God has a very distinct kind of voice, I guess, for me. I kind of made a pact with him a long time ago that if I ever started to really stray and whatnot to kind of get my attention, he does that in the weirdest ways. And that's kind of when I sit up and go, okay, I'll follow you now. That's it.
What was the question again? I'm sorry.
Well, the question is, how do you hear your shepherd's voice? You know, as Pastor Roy was saying, when he grew up, and indeed when I grew up, it was a very monochromatic world. And now it's not. It's a very diverse, rich, fomenting place that we live in. And so back in when Jesus talked about this lesson, when he spoke this analogy, he was talking about a very simple place where a few shepherds had a few flocks of sheep, and you know, each shepherd would call out, and each sheep that belonged to him would recognize his voice and follow him. And now, if you were to see that sheepfold, it would have 397,000 flocks of sheep in it, and all of these different shepherds calling out. How do you know which one to listen to?
Yeah, just as you put it in that perspective and paint that image, I definitely concur with the fact that it's difficult for people to kind of see. There are so many messages being put out these days, and with our present day society and culture and of advertising and of so many messages bombarding us, it's almost like I have to swim through a sea of different voices to get through. And I really think for myself personally, I'd listen to my conscience, the good and the bad consciences. We all have that, so to different variations within us, and basically filter as much as possible through, you know, through my faith and through Jesus and his life and his example. And just trying to work with that.
That was a good one. Melissa, how do you know how to be the right one? You're the shepherd here.
Wow, that's a great question. How do you be the right one? I don't know if you ever know. I think for me, as I'm listening to this, to tag on to what Dee said, there is so much in the way of exclusionary. We talk about being inclusive, and yet the voices that we hear are, well, only if you do it this way, and only if you do it that way, and only these people can be a part of it and not those people. And I think, when did that start? When did Jesus start excluding people? I don't remember that in the stories. I don't remember him saying, no, you don't get to come to my table, or I'm not going to hang out with you. You don't look like I do, or you don't have the same sexual orientation as I do. You know, that wasn't it. And so for me, as I'm listening, that's what's coming through. You know, where's the inclusiveness? Where is the love? Where is the grace? And as that's trickling through, that's what I also want to project. So I hope that when I share messages and when I'm speaking to my students, that's what I'm projecting, is the love and the grace and the inclusiveness.
Well, Roy, you've brought up an interesting observation, which is almost like an objection. Are you telling us then that this lesson from John chapter 10 doesn't hold any relevance for us today because it was a different world then?
One thing I'm aware of is that in the Gospel of John, Jesus puts a heavy emphasis, really makes the point about abiding in him. It's, you know, the vine. You are a branch. The thing you need to do is stay connected. He doesn't say go out and do all these great deeds. He's saying abide in me so that you will bear fruit. And what I get out of this gospel is not that we've decided who's in and who's out, but that, again, it's Jesus really saying it's important to abide in me, to stay connected, be part of this. For me, listening is, first of all, staying connected with a community. That I think this is what Melissa would be trying to also maintain, is that there is a bit of a community that I'm listening to. And a second is, when I do go to the Bible, or when I do read the Bible, to let it bring abiding in Christ to me, and not just a whole bunch of rules and that kind of thing, but to help me abide in Christ. And then in terms of telling them apart, by your fruits, by their fruits you will know them. Is this leading me to be more connected with the world in a helpful way? Is this leading me to other people, or is this excluding? Is this hateful? Is this all these? These are fruits that don't work. So I think it's real important to check out what does this group lead to? What is being part of this? Where does it take you? Does it? And it isn't rocket science. I mean, the following, and again, abiding in Jesus is basically a matter of trying to be obedient. And he's the one that washed their feet in this.
What were the other characteristics of a cult? The first one was that it blindly follows.
Mm-hmm. A second one is devaluing the outside world. You get together and agree that everybody out there is bad. We better stick together. Devaluing. The third, let's see, over complete dependence on a leader, devaluing the outsider, using language and words that are basically exclusive to that group so that others can't understand it. And I wrote them down to make sure I wouldn't forget. Let's see. Where'd it go?
Well, many of those things sound like the early Christians, the early Christian community. Wasn't it really an insular world as described in the Acts, John?
From my perspective, I think you can think of it as an insular world. But when we look historically at all the different groups of Christians that were out there and the different Christian theologies that came about, it was really quite diverse. I mean, it took us several hundred years to finally come up with some basic doctrine as to what we all believed. I think it can appear to be that it was insular as people were exploring their faith and learning it, but it was very diverse.
Did you find the other one?
The complete dependence on a leader, the creation of insiders, outsiders, devaluing the world outside, and having a language, vocabulary that is unique to that group. The reason I got so interested in the book is he doesn't talk about, you can label things as cult or not cult, you can do that, but to look for cultic behavior in your group. And for me, it's one of the biggest things to me as pastor, is to recognize when I am becoming cultic, when I'm beginning to be the only authority in the congregation, that's cultic. And so it isn't like, now you're a cult, it's that you're starting to do some cultic things. His illustrations from corporate world and the military are fascinating. I mean, to say how cults, you know, it has something in common with cults.
Well, we're just about out of time, holy smokes. John, you're going to be a pastor Saturday, and this is going to be your first official gospel lesson. Mm-hmm. How are you going to preach it?
I'm going to be preaching it from how do we listen to those voices from the outside and separate them. But one of the important things of this lesson doesn't happen on Sunday for me, but happens on Saturday. This gospel lesson is one of the gospel lessons for those who are about to be ordained and in the Episcopal tradition. And it comes to the Episcopal tradition through the German theologians that the Episcopals had borrowed from. I believe it's Bucer, the German theologian, was the one that helped shape the Episcopal ordination rite. So it's one of the things that connects us, not only as Lutherans and Episcopalians, but connects this lesson to me on Saturday.
And again, congratulations. Roy, you've preached this one a whole bunch of times.
Yes.
What's your favorite way of preaching?
Well, first, I want to do a quick little Mother Teresa thing on listening. Where did I read this last week? Mother Teresa talking about prayer. They said, how does that go? She said, what do you say to God when you pray? She said, I don't say anything. I listen. Oh, well, what does God say to you? He doesn't say anything. He listens. And if you don't understand that, I can't explain it to you. That's Mother Teresa. For me, I find myself most wanting in this gospel to make sure that we talk abiding in rather than exclusivity. This is not about trying to apply our current questions to that. To that solution. So it's about abiding in, and it's about that we really understand this pastor shepherd flock to be a healthy growing thing rather than stick close together, and the world out there is bad, and to be somewhat aware of the cultic dimensions that are possible.
Melissa, as a pastor of the campus ministry, how would you describe this gospel text?
For me, what hits home is more about the role of the shepherd. Who is the shepherd? What kind of a person is the shepherd that's leading through the gate? Who gets to, you know, who goes in? What are you going through the right way? Are you climbing over the fence? And that's what really struck me as I think about this, is what kind of a shepherd am I going to be?
Well, thank you all very much for tuning in. This has been Leap to Faith. Michael Olson here with all of the good folks at the campus ministry at CSUMB, Melissa Harper and crew, Pastors John Perez, Roy Bloomhurst, and, of course, a big thanks to producer Anton Prang. You can always hear this again archived on the webpage at leaptofaith.org. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Hey, see you in church on Sunday.